Okay, before we begin this episode, we want to mention that we have a live event coming up. That live event will be in Chevy Chase, Maryland on Thursday, April 4th in the evening, I believe starting at 7 o'clock. We're going to do a live taping of a podcast, and we'll have special guests. Don Zantara,
a legendary producer, owner of Inner Air Studio, founder, and also a musician in his own right. James got four releases out, so it's going to be a really cool conversation, especially if you like anything to do with DC punk. He's kind of the man who's been there from the beginning.
Like, what kind of bands are we talking?
We're talking Minor Threat. We're talking Fugazi. We're talking Rites of Spring. We're talking Faith. We're talking Scream. We're talking all the big hitters.
All of that. So he was there through all of that era. I'm sure he has a lot of great stories to tell, and you're going to get to hear those firsthand by going to the live event. He'll also play some of his own music, as you mentioned.
Which would be really cool.
So that's going to be cool. You do need to get tickets for this event. They're only $5. It's not that bad.
$5.
Go to suburbspod.com, and there you'll find the link where you can buy the tickets to the show. I assume we'll also have some tickets at the door. I don't know, but your best bet is to go and get them in advance.
Better safe than sorry.
Just do it right online there. We hope to see you at this live taping today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Jim, we're sorry you couldn't make it to the interview with Martin Phillips.
Yeah, Jim, what happened? What kept you away?
I'm sorry, guys. I had the chills. Okay, so Patrick, yesterday we mentioned... So there was something special coming up on the show, right?
I did some foreshadowing.
And today is that day.
Yeah, I'm excited about this, Jim, to unveil the interview we did with Martin Phillips of The Chills. We're down in my basement right at the moment, and we're at maximum capacity because we had to have Nick Scalera over because he was my co-host. You were battling the flu
that week,
pretty much all week, and Nick was going to be there anyway, but we deputized ourselves, and the Bish was there watching the controller.
Yes.
So we had a team of three to do the job of one.
So this show, if you're new to the show, if you came to check out the interview with Martin Phillips, this show is called Rockin' the Suburbs, and I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us, as you mentioned, is...
Nick Scalera.
So thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
And Nick, I specifically wanted Nick to go be part of this interview anyway, even at the point where I was still healthy enough to think that I was going to make
it, exactly.
And then I ended up bowing out. But even at that point, I wanted Nick to go because Nick is, of course, our resident Flying Nun Records expert.
Yes, he is.
And to the point where earlier on the show, if you go back in our archives, you can find this. I'll look up the episode numbers here in a minute. You can hear Nick talking at some length about about like the whole history of Flying Nun Records for like a whole week of episodes, right?
And they were really well received. We were thrilled, you know, last year when we started looking at some of the listening numbers that the Flying Nun episodes were really well received. They were great. And we haven't told Jim yet, Nick, but Flying Nun week two.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, we do. I haven't told you yet.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes, we just did.
It's 2 weeks though, right?
I think so.
You said 2 weeks.
Flying Nun two. Tokyo Drift. Okay. Those episodes for Flying Nun Week 1 were episodes 330 through 334.
Okay.
So go back on any of the big podcast platforms, look at our archives, and you'll find those episodes. Give those a spin. Now, tell us what the interview was like.
Well, it was incredible. Neither of us had ever met Martin before, and he certainly is a legend. He was there at the beginning. If you go back and listen to the Flying Nun episodes, you'll hear him kind of throughout, right, Nick?
Yeah.
And give us a little context. This is the first time the band has been on a U.S. tour for a long time.
Yeah, the last time they were in the States was 1996, and that was kind of a tough time for the Chills. In the early 90s, they had a taste of possible major label success, and then it all kind of went belly up in 1992. So Ian Martin even talked about that a bit in the interview. It sure feels really celebratory, this go-around. You know, Martin had some major health challenges that we'll probably talk about a little bit. Wasn't sure if he was going to make it this far. So it was a huge thrill for me and for Patrick and for the Bish to meet him. I never actually had the opportunity to see the Chills live. I've been a fan since the late 80s, and this is the first time I'd ever seen them. I managed to miss them back in the day.
The key, I think, part in this first section is Martin Bull. Can you give a little context? Because he talks at length about what a key figure he was in the band.
Right. It's interesting because one of the issues with the Chills has been that it's Martin Phillips has been the main singer, songwriter, creative voice, but there's been a revolving cast of band members. I believe it's up in the 20s or something
I think that's right.
But what Martin talks about in the interview is how this very early lineup that included Martin Bull as the drummer was one that really had some chemistry. Martin Bull contracted leukemia, and it was a very sort of up and down process as these things could be. And no one thought that he was a very healthy guy, that he wasn't going to make it. But I think the illness went for several months, and then Martin Bull died. And it was a very shattering experience for Martin Phillips in the Chills, to the extent that they wondered whether they would go on or not. So it's a really, the Chills had a lot of ups and downs, and this was a very bleak period. It was right at the start. It was right when the band was hoping to, get some wider acclaim, and this set them back several months in a lot of ways. And you'll hear Martin talk about that, but it's clear that Martin Bull was more than a bandmate. It was a very close personal friend, as a lot of those guys were in the Dunedin scene. So it was a very tragic thing that happened.
Yeah, so much so that they even changed their name for a short period of time to a different name.
Right.
Yeah, and you'll hear Martin talk about that, but I'm ready to toss it over and hear what we got.
All right, so let's get to the interview right now with Martin Phillips of The Chills.
Martin Phillips of The Chills, this is more than an honor and a pleasure to have you on our podcast. Been a fan for a long time. Nick, I know, has also been a fan, and it's great to have you back in America and touring here in DC. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me along, and it is actually really great being back. It really is. It's quite a relief.
It's the first time since 96.
That's right, and that was a strange tour. It was kind of like last-ditch attempt to see if there was something to salvage from the previous 16 years of history, and it kind of didn't really work. We had a good rock tour, but it was not going anywhere anymore at that point.
I this is the first time I've ever seen the Chills. I've been a fan since the 80s, so it's just so excited to be here. But I thought maybe we'd kick something off with some early days discussion. So we're big fans of the Dunedin Double EP. And one question I've always had, I didn't really know this, did the bands all know that they were going to be on the same EP? How did that come together?
I was with The Clean on tour when we met Roger Shepherd first of all in Christchurch, and then the tour continued to Auckland, where discussion was already underway between Roger and Chris Knox about this proposed idea for a label. And at that point, it was kind of pointed out to Roger that there were a whole lot of other bands in Dunedin. I think at that point I had a very early Chills live tape, and he was impressed, came down, saw all these bands, and so yeah, right from the start the concept was to kind of do, I don't know about a double EP, but some sort of compilation to show off. I think, obviously there were precedents, had been set, label things, there were Cherry Red compilations and all sorts of things going on. It was quite, but the actual format, being told we had three songs, and of course the Stones, being the Stones, did four, and everyone was pissed off because we could have done four too. And my big regret about that is we were already playing some really powerful songs. I chose to record the three chronologically earliest songs that we're doing, two of which had actually come from the same years, which was the band before that. So, it's a bit of a shame. We could have caught a really powerful version of Night of Chill Blue, or not quite Oncoming Day, but certainly some of, there was a song, I Saw Your Silhouette, that was our kind of closing number at the time, and never got caught, but still it was exciting. And for us, the Chills, We'd never even done demos. We'd never even recorded ourselves on a cassette player in practice rooms. So this was our first time recording, and it shows. It's so kind of New Zealand and humble and hesitant and self-aware, and but it's precious and it's good. Yeah.
Tell me a story, tell me a story. Let me drift. Tell me a story, tell me a story. Let me drift. Make me think I'm not really in this place. Let your words run like summer rain down my face. Let your voice caress my mind like a loving touch. I'm not asking too much. I just don't want the worry of telling myself. Tell me a story, tell me a story. Let me drift. Tell me a story, tell me a story. Frantic drift. Let me rest in peace or in pieces. Let me die. Just tell me I can survive. If you wanna keep me alive.
You know, Martin, I going along with what you were saying, you know, you didn't record yourselves a lot, and yet you're such a well-known record collector and fan of all kinds of different music. If there was one producer at one period in history that you could work with in when they were in their prime, who would that be? Does anybody come to mind immediately?
That's a really tough one. I did used to think it would be wonderful if somebody like Shel Talmy or somebody had retired to Dunedin and was there when it was happening. I just thought, okay, I'm not quite going to retire right now. Something, you know, somebody who knew how to capture the power. So,
yeah.
You know, obviously George Martin is kind of, but then you think, no, he's going to muck with it too much. So,
right.
You know. And I still, I'm not one of those people who at that point even really looked, I didn't understand what a producer did. I didn't even particularly look at who played on what records. I just like the songs, you know. Mm. So some of my friends, I was generally a year or two younger than most people in my scene. They were all following the British weekly papers. Some were getting subscription Rolling Stone, Cream magazine, that kind of thing. And they were up at the play. They would know. They could have told me who the producers were. But back then, I didn't know. And I think it was good for us because it meant Chris Knox and particularly Doug Hood, who was hands-on, learnt as we did, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was good for us all. Yeah.
In that little room with the four-track, right? Trying the reel-to-reel, trying to work it out, right? That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it is. And that got carried around, obviously, to just any place.
Yeah.
Only about a week ago, I drove past the Legion of Frontiersmen Hall in Auckland, which is just... you know, blink and you miss it. It just looked like this most decrepit little shed, really. And it wasn't much better back then. And it was just hired for probably $10 a day and the equipment taken in. You know, all that was part of the adventure. And that's part of what the spirit, I think, which you probably notice more than we do about the recordings, because that it's only more recently that I can actually see from an international point of view what it is about the New Zealand stuff that stood out.
Mm-hmm.
We just
mm-hmm.
assumed it was kind of like the best we could do under the circumstances, and we actually tapped into something a wee bit special, so it was good.
We'll talk about Chills have always been kind of, there's been triumph and tragedy along the way, right? And I kind of just wanted to hear you chat a little bit about Martin Bull and that sort of experience of going through the heartache of the you know, him dying of leukemia, and then and how that impacted the band going forward, and if you can kind of like go back to that how did you recover and move on from that? And
well, first of all, do you know the name of the Chills documentary? Is The Chills, The Triumph and Tragedy of Martin? For a while it was going to be Pink Frost, then it was going to be Brave Words, and then now this. I talk about that in the movie, that the death of Martin Bull impacted us as way beyond the band, the whole sort of peer group, as one of our first kind of deaths of somebody that we knew. I think people had died maybe in car accidents and stuff before, but to see somebody so strong and so vibrant and musical just go downhill so quickly, He started recovering. We started practicing again, and that he got exhausted so quickly that I believe to this day that was one of the reasons he died quickly afterwards, when he realized he couldn't maintain the musical output. So that shocked me. That made me realize the importance of what we were doing. That was the first band that had sort of, you know, the early bands rocked and stuff, but the first real chemistry in the Chills was Martin Ball, Terry Moore and myself. So, and what a lot of people still don't realize is that Rolling Moon and Pink Frost were recorded only, I think, 7 days apart, so in 82. So we kind of shelved Pink Frost for a while, thinking we hadn't quite got it. What are we going to do? Waiting for Martin to get well again, and we're going to go back and do it again. Then when he died, we listened to it, realized, no, just all it needs is a better vocal, and I think I did a better guitar part or something. So, yeah, it was at that point we weren't quite ostracized, but the sheer fact of the gall of going on calling ourselves the Chills really did kind of grate with some people that didn't even see, you know, because Martin had become so crucial to it. And also we were getting above our station. We'd toured as far as Christchurch, and, you know, and so on. Shane Carter even talked about that, to sort of coming back from a short tour like that and just the Dunedin kind of knives out. It's bizarre to think, but in some ways it's still going on. We're still the band that kind of broke away. They know that a lot of the international success is owed to bands like ourselves and the Clean and the Bats and the Verlaines who got out there, but it's still kind of hard for them to accept that perhaps they're kind of deliberately staying in a lo-fi state, you know, as opposed to kind of venturing out. It's touchy ground.
Yeah.
But yeah, my point being that was, I think, I hadn't realized until we were doing this documentary, looking back, yeah, that must have been when I decided this is seriously what I'm doing with my life. I think it's been said before, we called ourselves A Wrinkle in Time after one of my favorite childhood books for one weekend, but everyone just called us the Chills anyway. So it was back to the Chills.
So we left off right there, heard a really interesting history there and the story of that four-track machine that they would take around to those places and record those seminal early singles is really kind of amazing.
It is. I mean, you get to hear about the DIY ethic of Flying Nun, yeah, which is something we talked quite a bit about in that long week of episodes that you can find. You know, there wasn't always the best situation either. I mean, Martin talks a bit about the Dunedin WEP, although it really broke those bands, it was the first major recording for those Dunedin bands. It wasn't an extremely professional operation.
No.
You know, but some magic was certainly caught there.
And you know what kind of blew my mind was that they'd never recorded themselves at all.
Right.
Like, they just didn't even think of it.
They
were just like a little band from New Zealand. We didn't even think of recording our practice or anything. That was the first time they'd ever been recorded, which
right.
is kind it's of incredible.
A truly amazing little tidbit that Martin brings up. But I hadn't heard, actually.
Me neither.
And I've studied a lot of this stuff.
Very cool. So, part two tomorrow,
yeah,
right?
Got more good stuff.
Continue the conversation over three episodes.
Yep.
And another thing I want to point out to listeners is if you are a patron of Rock in the Suburbs, and the way you do that is go to patreon.com/suburbspod, mm-hmm, and you can join at various levels. But if you are a patron at least the $5 a month level, you would have gotten access to the uncut interview with Martin Phillips in advance. Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind. When we do future interviews, we're going to be doing that as well. So you can hear, you know, the full thing.
Could have been enjoying it for almost 2 weeks.
You pay money to not hear us, which is what I think is really a great feature of this.
We're starting to figure it out.
Good little scheme we got cooking here. So anyway, please, if you can, support the show by visiting our Patreon page, patreon.com/suburbspod, and you can help us out with a financial donation and then get some extra bonus cool stuff. All right, enough about that right now. If you want to correspond with us, that's totally free. About the chills or anything else, you can email rock@suburbspod.com or you can call and leave a message, 612-440-1984. There you go. And you can also find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, all of those at Suburbs Pod. Anything I'm forgetting? I think that's about it, right?
Yeah, I think we've tidied it up and really looking forward to hearing more from Martin tomorrow.
Because, of course, people are listening. How often?
Every day.
Every day. We do this every day, people. All right. Let's get out of here and go on to tomorrow's episode, part two with Martin Phillips of The Chills. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And Nick Scalera.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Interviews over.